Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, a wonderful political affairs program where we talk about a diverse set of issues from the left and the right. And joining us from Cuernavaca, Mexico, is Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hola, everybody. You're building the wall on this side to keep the Americans out.
Jim, I don't know exactly what you're doing in Mexico, but we're grateful to have you on the program remotely and sitting on the right, Representative Dan McKay.
Hey, good morning, Natalie. And Jim, far, far away.
Dan, with our clearer audio quality, we will have to dominate the program, which is hard to do with someone like Senator Jim DeBacchus.
You know, it's actually going to be nice. We're going to get a word in edgewise. We're going to complete topics, and we're going to stay on subject. This is amazing.
Jim, is there any sense down there of people understanding what happened and how significant it is to Americans that Senator John McCain passed away?
No.
I didn't think so. I'll tell you, stateside, there's a lot of news on this, and there's a lot of tributes and a lot of incredible things about Senator John McCain's life. There's also President Trump and the way he handles something like this, which is as if he completely forgets his role as President of the United States and just plays to his emotions. And I'll go to Jim first to just hear his reaction, and then Dan, we'll get your follow-on.
I read President John McCain's last kind of message to the American people, and it was one of, look, we need to find the stuff we agree on. The great tragedy of America at this moment is we're not solving the problems, the serious problems of the country. We're dealing with this horrible personality, and what's he going to say next, and what's he going to tweet? It's a novella. And it's a great distraction from the American people. It's sad.
Yeah, yeah. Dan, you know, what do you make of the way the president has handled McCain's passing? I mean, if I remember it right, they lowered the flags to half staff for like a day, and then they went back up, and then they changed their mind and brought him back down. And initially he wouldn't issue a statement, just wanted to tweet. Then his staff talked him into a statement. But
yeah.
Really? Like, you know, this person served his country so honorably, and whether you had agreements, disagreements, but he's a patriot.
Like we do on the show, we frequently have to find some, you know, there's always some policy difference, mm-hmm. but there's a collegiality that nobody on the show will recognize, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit different, I think, than the president. I think he deals with his relationships differently. You're either with him or you're not.
Yeah.
He's got
a good list and a bad list.
And it's not like, he's like a really bad Santa version,
mm-hmm.
you know, of a president. that should have come out of Jim. I was just channeling my inner Jim. You mentioned the naughty and nice list, and that's kind of where it got me. But I wish that people honestly would step back when someone, you know, when someone passes away.
I mean, he's meeting his maker.
Yeah, just. Let's back away and not make it about politics. The person was a person.
Yeah. So if we localize this just a little bit, some really interesting things. John Huntsman Jr. had this really peculiar relationship with Senator John McCain. And the way I remember it is he endorsed John McCain and his father endorsed, come on, help me here, Dan or Jim.
Mitt Romney.
Okay.
I knew it was significant.
But the point is, that John Huntsman Jr. has this connection, and he said after McCain's passing, aside from my own father, there's been no one more impactful in my life. Wow. And I'm the people who have been most impactful in my life are typically family members, and they're not, you know, politicians from another state. So what do you think's going on here? And let's go to Dan first, and then Jim, let's let you bring that one home.
Well, I think it just highlights Senator McCain has a very unique outlook on life. I've always been a school of he who suffers the most sees the most, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And going through what he went through in Vietnam was not an easy experience by anyone's account. And when you read the story firsthand, you realize that, that John McCain, because his dad was a powerful admiral, was actually offered a way out within a couple of days of being taken captive when he first was shot down. So anyway, all of that said, when you read the story of John mm-hmm. McCain, and actually, you know, I've only gotten to know him through a book, but when you get to know him, you realize there's a potential for someone to make an impact. And mm-hmm. and he's a He's a very good man. I mean, that's and he left a good impact on the country and on the state. And I think he moved the country forward in a lot of positive ways. He would have made a better president back in 2008, but that's, you know, the voters decided.
Jim, your comment on John Huntsman Jr.'s relationship with Senator McCain.
I think the clearest indication that John Huntsman is hating Moscow and is in one of the worst imaginable positions came that way. He has to know that's going to get back to Trump. He has to know that that's going to irritate Trump. That's not what's expected out of Trump loyalists. And I suspect that that association between Ambassador Huntsman and Trump is going to end rather soon and abruptly.
Wow, there's a prediction for you on both sides of the aisle. One other local comment made by our senior senator, Orrin Hatch. He gave a 10-minute speech on the Senate floor where he honored John McCain. He called him, Jim, let's go to you first. He called him a man for all seasons, a voice of temperance in intemperate times, and a model of civility and reason. That sounds like some good speech writing for Senator Hatch. Jim, quick comment there.
Well, why doesn't Trump hire Hatch as speechwriter? I hope he's available soon. And you know what?
He's going to be available soon.
One of the things that made McCain so great is he was very flawed. I mean, he got involved in the Keating mess. When all the savings and loans were failing. He met with the regulators and put the squeeze on a very, very big donor. And then what happened? There was a mea culpa. And he said, I screwed up, and that's where McCain-Feingold came from. And you see that three or four important times. He made a serious mistake in South Carolina. And then in the middle of the campaign, he fessed up to it and he said, I broke my sense of morality and justice, and I wish I hadn't done that. It was a big mistake. And he didn't wait till after when he was writing his memoirs. I think we can all learn a lot from that.
Yeah, I you know, that's a very great point, Jim. And it's interesting to me. I'm listening to a podcast right now, and everybody, you know, kind of knows I'm a podcast person. But Malcolm Gladwell's podcast, this season 3, is Revisionist History. And he makes this exact point, Jim, which is the people we should be holding up, the people we should be paying attention to, are those who make mistakes but are willing to own it and willing to move forward. And we need to be candidly more accepting of people who make mistakes, which is why, Jim, on this show, I just want people to know that I really like Jim DeBacchus, despite all of the mistakes he's made.
We only have a couple minutes left in this segment, but I have one more John McCain thing that has a real local touch, and it's the Olympics.
Oh.
And Dan, you might be too young for this. I love giving you the credit for being the young guy. And Jim, I don't know if you remember this, you were out of country, but Senator John McCain was... too old for it. Senator John McCain was the Olympic Darth Vader. If you guys don't remember this, he was very critical. There's the breathing. He was very critical of all the federal funding that came to Utah to host the O2 Games, and wasn't really a friend to us. So
we ripped off the federal government. We paid $1 billion for I-15, saying it was for the Olympics, and it went on and on and on and on. I mean, let's face it, McCain had a point.
Okay, so Jim, that's revisionist history for me.
This is Jim complaining about ripping off the federal government.
While he's living in like Japan or Russia. Yeah. I was sitting there in the governor's office. That's not what happened.
Yeah, and he's also and Jim is also complaining that we're not taking enough federal money for health care or whatever. Anyways, that being said, that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, he is the bad guy when it comes to Olympic funding.
Okay, interesting.
Hey, you're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Representative Dan McKay on the right, and coming to us from Mexico on the phone, Senator Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about medical marijuana. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We're talking about a bunch of interesting issues affecting our state. And let's talk about the Count My Vote decision that came out from the Utah Supreme Court. The Count My Vote, the ability to put, you know, through a petition of the people to put SB 54, the law that allows you to get on the ballot via signatures.
We're somewhat familiar with it by now.
It will not be on the November ballot. And Count My Vote had its day in court and did not prevail. The formal opinion hasn't been released yet, but we know there was at least one dissenting opinion. I'm guessing that was Paige Peterson. Mm-hmm. I'm disappointed in what they came up with there, but they used a lot of, Dan, I'll use a legal term, judicial restraint here, because instead of doing the right thing, they just, meaning the right public policy, they just honored the letter of the Constitution.
You have a much more insider reaction. So I'm going to put on my Natalie hat for just a moment and ask you, tell me what was the reaction really from, you know, because you're close with Mike Leavitt and with Rich McKeon and several of the Count My Vote folks. So what was the reaction on that side? And what do you think the thoughts and the outlook is for the future?
Well, so thanks for asking. The Leavitt people are very, I'll use the term, continually productive. This isn't ever about taking sides or throwing grenades or anything. The Count My Vote people will continue to defend SB 54. So it is the law of the land. Nothing changed. We just didn't get to make it more formal. Count My Vote will have a legislative strategy to make sure to withhold the the honor of SB 54, the compromise that was made. There's going to be new leadership in the House and Senate, so there's work to be done. And I'm sure there will be a PAC, a political action committee, to help candidates, get signatures and continue to make these reforms a part of our electorate. Hmm. So continually productive.
Yeah.
Jim, what was your reaction to the Count My Vote decision?
It's very complicated. You just need to know this in a simple perspective. Shame on the Utah Supreme Court. The Constitution guarantees the people the right to have initiatives, and this Utah Supreme Court decided that a very few number of people can stop tens of thousands of people from getting things on the ballot. Shame on them. They stood up against the will of the people and against the Constitution.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I take some, comfort in is that it is still the law of the land. So we do have a modernized system where it's not these, caucuses are the only way to get on the ballot. And then there's incredible public support for this opening of the system. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is the future, and it's just a tougher battle than we had hoped for someone like me.
Yeah, I would say looking at where, let me talk about the court for just a second. So I don't know about judicial restraint versus good public policy. I think that argument can be debated. And I will let Natalie have that debate. She wins today.
I thought I used a big legal term anyway.
Yeah, no. That was very good. You did not go Latin, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
I curl up in the fetal position when Latin comes out. But I will say that as hard as it is to get initiatives on the ballot, and, in Utah, we've actually never had one qualify before until this year. So of the ballot initiatives that were proposed, three made it onto the ballot, despite some, one group being out trying to remove signatures from one of them.
This is Medicaid expansion, better boundaries, so the redistricting, and then the medical marijuana.
Medical marijuana. Yeah. So those three, they all made the ballot, and there weren't, terribly well-funded groups or well-organized groups or whatever it means. So the initiative process it worked, and it didn't work for everyone. And regardless of how you feel about the policy one way or the other, it worked. There are citizen initiatives, and they are on the ballot, and they are available. It's still a meaningful process. And I bet if I'm the court, I would have looked at the success of those other measures and said,
really hurt Count My Vote.
Yeah, I'd say, at the end of the day, if all those other measures hadn't been running and been successful, I think the court might have said, okay, this is too hard. Mm-hmm. But because so many qualified, I think it's a
showed that the burden could be reached.
It's
a great point.
It's
a great point. Jim, let's stay with ballot initiatives for just a moment and go to Prop 2. So this is the medical marijuana ballot initiative we all get a chance to vote on in November. In the past week, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Dan, did you notice I called them by the correct name?
I noticed. And Emily wrote it out all the way. She did not miss. She didn't even miss the hyphen.
That's right. The Church officially came out against Prop 2, not really a surprise. But they also emailed members urging them to vote against the ballot initiative. So it took a really large step towards telling members what to do. Jim, what's your reaction? And then I'll have some comments as well.
I remember President Hinckley on Larry King looking at the camera and saying, the church takes moral stands, but we never tell our members how to vote. And I just wonder if this is a change in that policy, because that there was nothing subtle about that. The other thing is, you know, churches have a right to speak, as far as I'm concerned, just like every other group in America. And when they speak out theologically, frankly, I don't have much of an opinion. It's their church, whatever it is, let them have whatever situation they want, vis-a-vis their rules and commandments and the rest. But when churches step out into the public sector, into the marketplace, into the clearly political, all I'm saying is they no longer have the cloak of, well, you can't go against us because we're a church. Baloney. Now that you're in the political boxing ring, you better expect to get hit, and you better understand that other people have other opinions, and you can, on one hand, say, we're a religion, and you have to respect us and our opinions and the rest, and on the other hand, get in there on a very, very political issue and then cry protection. So as long as they're willing to take the lumps that are going to come, especially from young people across the state, amen. There's one more opinion, and let's battle this out.
Yeah. Dan, I'm really curious what you think. You're a member of the faith, as am I. You know, we have this saying, it's from Scripture, where Joseph Smith said, give people correct principles and let them govern themselves. I'm getting the source right, correct?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Give people correct principles, let them govern themselves. So did they give us a principle here, or did they tell us what to do?
No, the principle of the statement is, if we have medicine, we have a process in this country by which medicine is dispensed. Mm-hmm. Let's follow that process. And in my opinion, it's a support for the federal government's process with the drug approval and FDA approval on medicines. So I think there's that, mm-hmm. right? And I think it rings true with the I can't remember, doggone it off the top of my head, the article of faith, but we believe in being subject to kings, presidents, rulers, and magistrates, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And honoring and sustaining the law.
We follow the law.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think the church, in affirming its position against medical marijuana, is affirming its position in favor of what it has already believed and stated and made very clear.
And I want to just jump in just a little bit on how you said that. Against medical marijuana. Of course, that's not what they said. They're against this proposition, right? Because there was a clear expression that there are reasons why medical marijuana can be helpful to people who suffer. It's just the way it's done matters. Go ahead, Jim.
If I can, wah, wah, wah. We are for medical marijuana. We're just not for this one, just like the legislature, just like the governor. Baloney.
Jim,
are saying that it's pure spin. Where were their proposals? They had ample opportunity over the last several years to come up with a proposal. But no, it was kill everything, and that included the church behind the scenes. They
Jim.
Made it clear that they did not want medical marijuana. And so now to play this spin game of, oh, no, really? We're not against medical marijuana. We just don't like this bill. Well, maybe that's true. I challenge the church. I challenge the legislature. I challenge the governor. Fine. If you're not against medical marijuana, where the hell is your bill?
Jim, I'll jump in there and just say that, the church's interpretation here mirrors my own. And so I don't think this is blah, 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 or playing the games or wah, 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 or whatever. I think there is a legitimate hurt that will come to our community by passing this proposition. And so that's just one person's opinion from the middle. But how we dispense, how we distribute, the dosages, being under care of a physician, those are important things, and particularly for adolescents. This is where it really means something to me. If we do anything in this state that makes marijuana more available to young people, I find that really troubling. But that's an opinion from the middle.
Jim, just, you know, we have there are acronyms in society where, you know, LOL and LMAO and all these other things, right? You hear, you know, you get text conversations. Jim just created a new one for me.
Where
the hell is your bill? With a B.
With a B.
I think that's some of the good
that will come from this. I do think that you're going to see responsible people, because someone like me, I wasn't that involved in the issue. Now that I've looked at it and studied it, I don't like it, and I want to be a part of getting something better.
Yeah. So. And I'm hopeful, though. I'm hopeful that for those who really are suffering, and that's the issue, because everybody's now trying to figure out, and I'm certain somebody is in the field right now polling this issue after the church has spoken, right? And they're doing a, if you're active member of the LDS faith, or if, or sorry, of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or not, and what your feelings are and how the church's statement changed it. I am betting right now that at best, this thing is at 50-50. And I would bet actually lower.
It's going to be fun to watch. Tough transition here, but I want to go very local, Main Street, and look at the Utah Theater, built in 1919, a historical building. We have a lot of beautiful, incredible historic buildings in Salt Lake City, all around this state. People are asking, particularly in the case of the old Utah Theater, what do we do with this building? And the reason this is becoming such a big deal is we have enough growth pressures in downtown Salt Lake City that they're ready to take that thing down. Jim, let's go to you first. Very quickly, we don't have a lot of time left. We want to fit in a couple of things, but what are your thoughts on the old Utah Theater?
Look, cities have souls, or they don't. Drive West Valley City around Redwood Road or State Street in Orem and watch one jungle convenience store after one strip mall. And then go to the great cities. Go to the cities that you remember. Go to the cities with a personality. Go to the cities that tourists want to go to and conventions want to go to. They preserve that. There's nothing special about having the brand new Maverick store replace that astonishing, beautiful, amazing theater. We did it with the Colville Tabernacle. We did it with so many mansions on South Temple in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Cities need to keep their history. They need those links to the past. We ought not to let those things go. One final thing. Remember, they came this close to tearing down the city-county building.
Stunning.
And replacing it with one of those ugly monsters.
You might be too young for this, Dan. But they did.
But that would have made a great location for a Maverick.
Oh, great. Dan, you're in the development business. Do you follow the sentiments of Jim that there are places that we need to preserve in perpetuity because of our history and our past?
Yeah, that is always the fine balance is,
which
know,
ones? Yeah.
You know, a piece of architecture gets built, and its evolution is it looks great when it's built, and entropy fall takes it apart, and then it becomes garbage. And then it's a question of when does that garbage become art? And it is inevitable. It happens to everybody, and it happens to everything. Senator McCain followed this same span. Now he's a national treasure, but Jim wasn't saying great things about him back in 2008.
Crazy.
So I just say there are these, and you ask what these, you know, and I assume that everybody feels this way, that there's a fine balance between we want our community to be excellent, and we want to shortcut the life cycle of when things are considered garbage. By the way, that's exactly what happened with City Creek,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
The church came in with a lot of money and took what would have been a blighted downtown area for at least 20 years
mm-hmm.
and turned it around and short-cycled the trash period of the piece of art.
Yeah. And kept some historical buildings.
And
I
kept
add.
Buildings in, yeah. in the process. You know?
Hey, we got to go to gripes. And Jim, I want to go to you first just because you don't know how much time's left on the program. So we'll go to you and you share what you're griping about from good old Cuernavaca, Mexico.
Sean Reyes, truly the most anti-gay politician of the era, is in court again. this time before the Supreme Court, asking that protections in job discrimination for federal employees, for LGBT people, be removed. Sean Reyes, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, there you go.
A good point made by Jim. Dan, your gripe.
I wasn't expecting him to end so quickly. So, okay, my gripe is our never-ending quest to name things after political people. I get it. There are several political people that make contributions. I take nothing away from that. But I heard recently, in just the other day in the Senate, they were considering a measure to change the Russell Building from the name, the Russell Building, named after a famous senator from South Carolina, and make it the John McCain Building within minutes of his passing. And I think there should be a one-year moratorium when we can't name things after people who've died.
Yeah, seems prudent. That seems prudent. So my gripe, I'm going to go back to the marijuana thing. I was listening to public radio, heard a program. It was on something about cannabis and gourmet cooking, but they titled something Bong Appetit.
Ooh.
That's my gripe. Too much glorifying of marijuana in this society. Hey, we've had Jim DeBacchus from Mexico, Dan McKay, and Natalie Gochner in the studio here in Library Square. Programs produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.